Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, episode 49 of season 2. Dave, I am rolling through the back roads of West Virginia trying to get back to Pittsburgh. So hopefully we'll be able to maintain contact here and talk about the Steelers' 41-7 loss. Or at least that's what it seemed like from my Twitter feed.
Yeah, mine too, I tell you. You know, we talked about this a little bit earlier today, Dave, that I think both of us feel that we were never in fear of this game being lost until maybe the last Chiefs possession, where when we're in that situation, that anything could happen, a defender slip, give up a big touchdown and all like that. And let's be honest, I mean, the Steelers' offense, they was sloppy on the night. We'll get into that more in here in a little bit, though. But, you know, I really didn't feel at any part of the game that they were in jeopardy of losing the game, despite how close the scoreboard was the whole game.
No, Dave, I agree. You looked at the offense with Tyler Palco at Kansas City. They chose not to dress Kyle Orton. The backup is a rookie, so you figured Palco was in there for better or worse. So he just didn't, even though, you know, they had a nice first drive and a nice catch by Bo over the middle where they converted that third down and then got a field goal to take the 3-0 lead. But, yeah, he just felt like, I just felt if the Steelers got on the board, the game was going to be over. Eventually they did. The couple things, obviously, that stand out, he didn't score any points in the second half. And this is a team that, you felt like if you got up, you know, two scores, if you really got up kind of, you know, 20 to 6, the game's over and you could really have your way with them. Unfortunately, you know, as has been the history with the Steelers, they don't really put teams away. I saw somebody set up something on Twitter that I haven't been able to confirm, but he said that in the past six years, the Steelers, in those years, they'll play six games each year against the AFC on the road. So that's a total of 36 games, and since they've got Cleveland on the road still, that's 35 total games that they've played that this guy looked at and said they only beat two AFC teams by double-digit points, Denver and I don't remember the other team. But I thought that was a pretty interesting stat.
Oh, yeah, I think it is. I haven't confirmed. I think I saw that. I haven't confirmed it either. But if indeed that is true, I mean, it's for years. And, I mean, let's throw Arians out of this. Let's go over over history, that it always seems like the Steelers play teams close, okay? It never seems sometimes that they blow out teams that they should blow out. And, you know, when you have what happened last night, which, for one thing, the third down conversions of the night were just absolutely atrocious. And then you have the problems in the red zone, like the drop by Mike Wallace on the first drive in the end zone. The very next play, the fumble by Mawaldi Moore that ended up being a touchback there. Several little things, errors at key opportunities in this game. And I'm not making excuses. It is what it is. It was bad execution at certain points of this game. You cannot go 3-for-11 on third downs and expect to blow people out of the water, even the Chiefs, in this game. And, you know, I wrote, you know, Tomlin said before the game in his interview with Michelle DeFoya that, you know, I kind of, he used the word shenanigans. Now, I know Tomlin was referring to the word shenanigans in the context of like the pre-game fight and all like that. But when, you know, he also said we're not going to get into any shenanigans. Well, shenanigans is exactly what happened throughout the game. And it was more than just, you know, certain plays as well, too, because you had the burned, wasted timeouts that Ben looked frustrated on early in the game with people not lining up in the right spot. And, you know, you throw in everything else that I have listed. I know you're on the road. You haven't read this post yet. But, you know, these little things like this add up. And maybe it's because they're coming out of the bye, had a couple of weeks off. Maybe they just weren't as focused against a team like the Chiefs that they possibly took too lightly. But you get what you get there, and you get a close game, what we saw last night.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your thoughts were on the buys. I mean, people have done a zillion studies now on teams coming out of buys, how they perform, and there seems to be no definitive answer. The Steelers had, they had some guys getting healthy. Certainly, we saw Manny Sanders in the game there, and Ben targeted him a few times. But, 11 weeks into the season, you don't want to see guys lining up in the wrong spot. You want to see plays getting in on time, that kind of stuff. Yeah, that you don't want that to happen. And, I don't think there are any excuses for that. You don't want that to happen in week one. You certainly don't want it happening in the 11th game that you play. Before we get into the game itself and into the nuts and bolts, why don't you take us through the injury report? Obviously, the big news was Troy not playing most of the game and Pouncey not playing most of the game.
Yeah, Pouncey, as Tomlin said in the post-game press conference, he had a stomach virus, and it was pretty obvious. They let us know real quick on the radio. I don't like listening to the regular broadcast, TV broadcast during these games. I always like to try to keep up, watch the game and listen to the radio broadcast. But it is what it is. It was a stomach virus. He, of course, left early, did not return. That meant Doug Legursky had to move over to center. That meant Chris Kimoata, who was demoted for this game, was back in at left guard. Polamalu, we saw, him leaving the first defensive series with that famed concussion-like symptoms, and of course he did not return. Now there's some mixed reports going around this morning on the future of Polamalu going forward. I've got a source telling me that Polamalu was quote unquote fine, that he suffered a mild concussion along with the stinger for in the game, and while that doesn't say that he's going to play next week, it just says it looks like it's the same situation as it was coming out of that Jacksonville game a few weeks back, when sort of the same type of injury when Maurice Jones-Drew nailed Troy in the helmet with his big old tree trunk thighs. Troy did not miss practice the next week and at all, if my memory serves me correctly. And, of course, he played in that game the following week, I believe, against the Cardinals. So, the ESPN guys are reporting that he could miss, extended time here. And all I got to say about that is concussions are tricky, especially when you have them. Someone like Troy, who does have a history of them dating back all the way to college, and especially when you have a couple close together like this as well. He'll be evaluated throughout this week. I'm sure Mike Tomlin will have probably not a real clear outlook tomorrow during his Tuesday press conference. But I was given the information they use term fine, so take that fine for what it is. By no means does that mean it's a guarantee that he plays next week. The other injury was Chris Carter and that hamstring. He battled this hamstring injury early in the season. Took him a couple weeks to get over it, back on the field, and then now he hurts that hamstring again. I'm willing to bet that hamstring injury could probably sideline him for a couple more weeks going forward here. So that was the brief injury report. You know how Mike Tomlin likes to spring new injuries on us on Tuesday, so we'll of course have everybody covered there tomorrow.
Yeah, I think you covered the Troy thing just right. The issue there, obviously, is you get a couple of these things back to back. Everybody in Pittsburgh now is familiar with a lot more familiar with concussions than they were a year ago. Obviously, because of the Sidney Crosby situation, it took him 10 months to get back. Nobody's suggesting that with Troy, but when you get things back to back, people are obviously going to be more careful. What I found interesting is that they had him standing on the sidelines. Usually, if you have a situation like that and it's relatively serious, you're not going to leave the guy unattended. You're going to kind of keep him for observation, probably keep him in the locker room. So I'll take that as being a small positive out of the situation. Dave, let me ask you this question. We hear all the time, and we've heard guys like Ryan Clark and James Harrison both talk about how they've both been fined for hitting guys in the head, and they say, we like coming up high. This is the NFL. We don't want to ruin a guy's career. If you told a guy to hit me in the head or hit me in the knees, I would hit him in the head. I would want to be hit in the head rather than the knees, because I want to be able to feed my family, and that's what's important. We've seen Troy now. We saw it against Cincinnati when he, as you said, put that guy on the Ferris wheel ride. We saw it last night. Troy goes in there. I'm sure he's trying to get him with his shoulder, but he definitely got his head in the action there. And the way he hit the ground for that kind of split second between when he made contact and when he landed on his face. I have no doubt that he was not in control of his facilities, because didn't brace himself at all, didn't get his arms up or anything, just kind of landed on his face mask, and you know, he was quickly come to, and you know, maybe it's just, you know, as they say in the old days, they just say, you know, he got his bell rung, and I'm relatively sure that's what happened. But you know, what are your thoughts about tackling and taking that approach to the tackle?
Well, you know, some people are calling it reckless today, I guess, but you know, it's nothing new the way Troy you know, throws his body around like that. We've seen that for years, and sure, that's probably lended itself to a lot of his concussions in the past. I mean, that's just how Troy plays. He hits low like that, and once he launches himself, like you said, you know, you might be intending to hit with a shoulder, you know, into maybe a thigh area. All it takes is a guy's knee swinging forward just a little bit, or you know, any number of things can happen, and then he gets basically combonged right in the helmet there. So, does he need a new style of tackling? You know, I think that takes away what Troy does. I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, dating back years, you know, we've seen in some games of him flying out of nowhere on a screenplay to take I recall the Titans game back a few years ago to start the season or early in the season, where he did the same thing. I mean, it's just how Troy plays, sort of a little bit of reckless abandon, but it's what makes Troy Troy, in my opinion. So I don't know. I guess I don't know really the answer to the question going forward here, other than just, you know, he's just going to have to be more careful.
Yep. And we saw a lot of Ryan Mundy. He got the easiest interception he's ever going to get in his career. Let's talk about the first quarter there. The Twitter world was incensed that, you know, the Chiefs were even bold enough to get a first down, and that the Steelers essentially went, I'm trying to remember the drives now sequentially here. They actually moved the ball on the first drive, and then Mwelde Moore fumbled, right? That was the first drive?
Well, the Steelers' first drive actually, of course, came after the Chiefs' first score. The Chiefs
Beautiful.
Were... Right. Yeah, the Chiefs were able to move the ball a little bit on their opening drive. The Steelers' first drive, you know, open up on the second play, offensive play. The Steelers were flagged for that substitution, too many men in the huddle. They overcame that. You know, you saw right away that Roethlisberger hit Heath Miller with that nice 20-yard gain, which made me feel a lot comfortable, because he really threaded that ball, you know, through a tight area, a space.
Oh, boy, did he. I had to watch that replay a couple times to see how that Chiefs defender, A, didn't pick it off, and B, at least get a hand on it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, they involved Hines Ward early in the game with a couple passes on that drive. I'm sure that incensed quite a few people. But, you know, he's going to get his catches going forward. We've talked about that. He provided a few good or one that I know of third down conversion later on in the game, and all that was good. And then you had a situation second and five from the Chiefs 42 on a Steelers opening drive where Ben threw that ball deep to the left in the end zone. Antonio Brown probably should have made the catch, but regardless, a defensive pass interference was called. But at the same time, Max Starks is flagged for holding on the play. So instead of getting the ball down at the Chiefs' one-yard line, you basically have a do-over, you know, because both plays offset. Ben turned back around and hit Antonio Brown, though, on the next play out of bounds at the Chiefs' 8-yard line. And then we saw, you know, some of the more shenanigans start where, you know, Ben made a good play to get the ball to Mike Wallace in the back of the end zone there. The Steelers used a very rare kind of a two-back situation there, play action faked Isaac Redman first man through. Wallace was there, and the ball just went right through Wallace's hands. That's an easy 6 points there that they miss, and they turn around on the very next play. People are incensed that Mwelde Moore is in there on second down, but, I mean, he had a good run off right guard there. Tom Bahaly makes a good play from behind, knocks the ball out, ball goes into the end zone, and the Steelers, you know, after a nice opening drive, come away empty-handed.
Yeah, and we've seen that this year. You know, I don't know how many times in a row it was. It had been seven games in a row where they scored on their opening drive. They have really done a good job with that. As you said, they converted some longer down and distances in that drive. Let me ask you this about the Mike Wallace play. Ben put the ball where it could be caught. We don't see Mike Wallace slide very often. The ball was about waist high. It's a difficult decision about how to go after that. He obviously did what he thought was the best thing to do. If he's doing it again, do you think he slides if he does it again, or do you think he tries to either lay out differently or just catch it on the run?
No, I think he was in the right position there. I almost kind of relate it to maybe a catcher getting crossed up, sitting on, you know, maybe a curveball and getting thrown a fastball or something like that. It just looked like the ball got on him in a hurry, and it just went right through his hands. I think you know, he had his two defenders beat coming from the left side there. He had it, you know, by sliding and getting low, he's providing a target where only he's going to catch the ball regardless. You know, it's either him or it goes through the back of the end zone like it did. So I don't think he needed to adjust on that. I think he just needed to make the catch.
Yep. And then, as you said, Melody Moore, question about, you know, choice of backs in that situation. Any second thoughts? I mean, Melody Moore's been pretty good with ball security. Obviously, Redmond's been a guy who's been good down around the goal line. And Mendenhall, you know, he's your feature back. If any thoughts about that early in the game, having Mueldy in there in that situation?
Well, we don't know exactly, you know, if maybe somebody was dinged, out of breath there or what. But, I mean, it was a little bit curious that Moore is in the game on second and eight. Now, you know, the game started off with Tom Bahaly already showing that he was going to be in the backfield most of the night. I thought, you know, I mean, he really had a field day with Max Starks over there, even starting on the first drive there. Maybe it was a little bit there to, you know, to maybe to give the impression they were going to help out in pass protection. But regardless, if Mueldy Moore holds on to that ball, he's down to the one or two-yard line. We're talking third and goal from the two or the three. And, you know, at worst-case scenario, the Steelers come out of that drive with a field goal that, you know, worst-case scenario. So, you know, it's easy to question personnel, especially when something like that happens. I would be curious maybe to hear Tomlin's response to that, though.
Yeah. I know we'll get into this. I'm sure your guys haven't got all the breakdown in terms of plays, participation charts yet, but I had tweeted after we saw Ward get two targets in the first drive there that I would be surprised if he got targeted twice more in the whole game. And you talked about the third down he converted later. I'm not sure that he got a fourth target. At most, he got four targets. Do you think the Steelers were trying to send any message or do Hines any favors by getting him a couple balls early?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule that out. You know, I think they want him involved early in the game. They want to dispel probably a few of the rumors floating around there. I mean, he was listed evidently in the press box as one of the starters. He was out there on the field for the opening series and all. I think it's in the back of their mind to get him his numbers throughout the rest of the year. And if it means, you know, the first series or two, you know, you wouldn't think Tomlin would be that type coach. You know, of course, he would claim that it's a team first, regardless, you know, win. But I think it's in his back of his mind to get Ward a few easy catches here and there. He was targeted four times on the afternoon. He did catch all four balls for 21 yards. The key one, of course, was a third down, as we mentioned later in the game there. But I would not rule that out going forward, you know.
I agree with you, Dave. I think you're spot on. I think that's it. Tomlin's never going to say it. That would be, if he says it, it's an embarrassment to Ward and to the team. But I definitely think that's it. And I'll be interested to see participation-wise. If Hines got 20 snaps in total, I'll bet, you know, more than two-thirds of them were in the first half. I didn't see him on the field that much in the second half.
Yeah, we should have that up either Tuesday or Wednesday, and that'll be interesting as well. And before we get on into this game a little bit further, too, what did you think about Emmanuel Sanders returning to kickoffs? Was that surprising to you?
It did surprise me, but it tells you a lot about what they think of Antonio Brown. And, you know, we saw this last year. We saw Sanders and Brown splitting duties, Sanders some of the kickoffs. You know, I think what they think is if Antonio Brown is now going to take 55 snaps on the offense, you don't need – and he's going to return the punts. You don't need him returning four to, you know, two to five kickoffs each week as well. We've got Manny Sanders. He's now clearly – probably number three or four on the depth chart. Let's use him. Let's get him active in the situation and involved in the game like we have with Brown. But I think it speaks volumes for what you think of Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I think they very well could be. It could have been a reason because they don't want to risk Brown to more injury. It could be just a sheer fact too, just wanting to give Sanders an opportunity back there, being as how, you know, Brown has been fantastic on returns. If you ask me, I was a little bit shocked on there. It'll be interesting if they ask Tomlin. Hopefully, ask Tomlin about this on Tuesday. The reason behind it, although Tomlin might not give an honest answer on there. At least it'll plant the seed that we're on to him. You know, not that he was trying to fool anybody. But I would be curious to know why that was, and I'd be interested to see. There were a couple holds on some kickoffs as well during this game that really, you know, stymied the Steelers. One return, I think Sanders had like a 20 or 25 yard return that it ended up negating that. So you know, not all the bad returns were his fault during the night, and poor field position to start some of these drives. So it'd be interesting to see if Brown gets a shot again next week, or if it's, you know, pretty much Sanders' job right now.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Dave, there's nothing more devastating. I don't think there's a penalty just in generic terms that is more devastating than a penalty on a kickoff return. Because generally you're going to find that, you know, between your own 25 and the goal line, and it's going to move you back half the distance or however far it is, and it really just makes it a long field. So, those types of things make a big difference. And I assume the blocking schemes and everything they're trying to do as a return team are exactly the same with Sanders back there versus Brown. But I just wonder if there's any kind of difference in thought about how they approach it.
Yeah, well, we did see, especially on the first Steelers kickoff, that David Johnson missed a block, that ended up getting Sanders flattened on his first return there. You know, I think this is pretty generic here. You know, I don't think they changed too much as far as what they try to do, only the personnel involved there. I think Al Evers has done a great job this year on special teams. So, it'll be interesting to see how this moves forward. I'm more interested to see if somebody asks Tomlin about it come Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, so then, you know, the Steelers don't get any points, but then it's then Tyler Palco turns into Santa Claus.
Yeah, the gifts kept – I almost fainted there. I think Ike Taylor might have about fainted too. They said after he had that interception, the radio guy said he was just ecstatic over there on the sideline. And hey, the guy deserves it. The guy's played good this year. Been fairly real consistent in coverage, battled some real good receivers this year. It's good for him to get a gift like that every once in a while. And boy, it sure was. And you know, the Palco wasn't done there either, because he the very next series, he gave another gift to Ryan Mundy there too. And Mundy really wasn't even the man in coverage on that play. Well, it was Ike Taylor.
Two of the worst throws I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I think Chris Collins were termed the second one like a slider that got away from him or something like that. On that play going back through. But yeah, the easiest interceptions you'll see all year. And the bad thing about it is, you know, the Steelers, after the first interception, they came away with the field goal. The good thing about it is they came away with a field goal on the first one, I believe, with Sushi hit nail on that 21-yarder, and then the second one they converted into 7 points there on the short pass to Wesley Saunders from the Chiefs 2-yard line. So at least we saw them turn turnovers into points there.
Yeah, you'd like to see, it'd be fun to see Ike take that back to the house. And get a touchdown on the return after he got jobbed on that touchdown against Oakland last year that he took back, and they called a roughing the passer penalty that was one of the more ridiculous calls we saw all season last year. Excuse me, cost Ike a touchdown. What did you think about the play selection after Ike's interception?
Let's see. That was, I'm trying to go back to my, yeah, they went Minden,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, they went Mendenhall to the right guard for 3 yards, and then they went run. They were trying to ram it in from the from inside the 10 there. So I had no problem with it. I'm not sure I like the third down call. I think that can be a little bit debated. I'm almost not convinced that maybe Antonio Brown did not run that right, the route right to give Emmanuel Sanders the proper rub that he needed. What ended up happening is they ended up taking both of their defenders into the same spot. Sanders ended up running into Antonio Brown's defender, and I believe because that was within 5 yards there, I don't think you're going to get the pass interference call there. They almost basically performed a pick on themselves. It's so hard to say. I don't know if that got audible out. It seemed like Ben audible to that. So, that was not my favorite call on the 3rd and 3, from the Chiefs' 3-yard line there. But at least they came away with the points there.
Yeah, the offense has been so good on play action. I was a little surprised they didn't go play action on 1st or 2nd down. I thought my interesting takeaway from that was that Ben targeted Sanders there. Obviously, been out of the lineup a couple weeks, and I don't know if he's trying to get him in the action as well, or he just saw a matchup he liked, or that was just the right read. But I just thought it was interesting that he was the guy targeted there. You mentioned the Wes Saunders touchdown. You're not going to see a prettier play all season. I mean, Ben's move to basically Matador, the Kansas City defender, was and also protect the ball at the same time. Take the ball down and basically move it toward his hip or behind his back a little bit to get as the defender went flying by. First of all, that's just genius. That was just really great stuff. And then he steps up and throws the ball the only place it can be thrown. And Saunders does an amazingly good job, not only catching the ball, but getting that first foot down so that he can get them both down. That play's probably going to get lost over the course of the season, the year-end highlights. But that was one of the better plays of the season for me.
Yeah, and that was also the only touchdown of the game too. So
there you go.
So how big was that? But yeah, and you had to when you got a young kid like that in Saunders who's played well, you always want to reward those kids like that in those situations, and you always wonder what goes through their head with a young kid. That split second that the ball's in the air, and them knowing they got a good shot at their first touchdown there. But he handled it just. As a professional there, did an excellent tippy-toe job getting both feet down there. I don't know how to praise it any more than that. It was glad to see him get his first touchdown and once again for the Steelers to convert turnovers into points.
Yep. So then we're rolling along here. It's 10-3, and you get a chance, I guess, at the end of the half there with Streisham, right?
Well, they trade
10-6. The Chiefs obviously get a field goal to make it 10-6, and Sushi's got to kick a long field goal. Dave, I obviously haven't had a chance to do much work today, and if I did, I would like to go back through Swisham's field goal log, because I think he's now hit 12 of his last 13 or something along those lines. And boy, his kickoffs have been good. A lot of kickoffs, deep into the end zone, and you would think from on Twitter that this guy was. I don't know what the right analogy is, but you would think he's just awful. And, the guy's missed 5 field goals all year, but he's hit 12 of his last 13, and a bunch of those have been 40 yards or longer. So I'm not quite sure where the venom for Sushi. I think he's replaced Arians as kind of, the lightning rod, it sounded like.
Oh, no, he hasn't replaced
him. Okay, maybe not replaced. Well, he's an electric bolt right next to him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's wearing aluminum foil on him. I must admit, there's been times this year where he walks out there, and I kind of wonder, what's going to happen. But there was no better opportunity to put pressure on the guy to test his mettle. In that situation there, let's face it, that field looked, last night I thought that field made Heinz Field look like Augusta National, there was divots all out of the place and all like that. It really, really looked horrible. You're in a hostile environment there. The Steelers had they kind of limped down the field, I guess you'd say, on that final drive. And you put that guy in a situation with 4 seconds left to make, I think that was his longest field goal of the year, if I'm not mistaken there, and he nailed it. So I don't know, kickers and punters and offensive coordinators, they easily catch the ire of fans there. So maybe this is a
Well,
move.
let me ask you, Dave. Let me ask you. There was a lot of chatter that when the Steelers went for it early in that, and I guess I think it might have been their first drive, or when they went for the fourth and one, there was a lot of chatter that, boy, they have no confidence to swish him. And I don't look at it like that at all. I say early in the game with that offense and the guys they have, I'm going for that every time. I don't care if, you know, my kicker's Sebastian Janikowski or Roy Girella or Tom Dempsey. I mean, I'm going for that. It had nothing to do with who my kicker is.
Yeah, and I think those fourth downs that you're talking about were maybe later in the game there. But, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you want to come, especially when you know that you're going to get the ball in the second half there to open up the second half. You want to come out of that final drive somehow, some way with points. Now, of course, you always want seven. But, you know, I mean, they were short on time there. They moved it down into field goal range, and they gave him the opportunity to put points on the board, and he did it. So, yeah, I'm not – I mean, let's face it, too. What was it, like 49 seconds when he had the third down pass to Mawaldi Moore, which actually went for negative yards here, for negative 1 yards.
Yeah, right.
And then you had both teams you had the Steelers call timeout, of course, and then KC – tried to ice swish him there. But yeah, I have no problems with that. I mean, put points on the board before you go to the half, and show your kicker you have a little bit of confidence in him.
Yep. So, you know, you got to feel pretty good, 13-6, and the Steelers getting the ball coming out of the second half, and lo and behold, that's all the offense we saw.
Yeah, and you know, I thought they still moved the ball pretty good at times too. We saw Kimuatu do what he does best on on several of those counter pike plays.
Yep.
Mendenhall had, you know, quite a few sizable runs, I thought. Now, one, of course.
He did. A lot of 6, 7, 8 yard runs there.
Yeah, and of course, now I think one, I can't remember, I think it was in the first half, one of the long ones was called back on a Heath Miller holding call, which I thought was a little bit of a questionable call, but I can understand why he got flagged there. But, you know, I thought they moved the ball pretty good. They had untimely penalties, you know, coming out in that second half, though. I do question the first and 10. Passed by Roethlisberger, you know, 6 or 7 plays into the drive that ended up being intercepted there. Ben looked like it looked like he just nonchalantly thought he was going to look off the safety on that play. There was still good coverage on Antonio Brown regardless without the safety attached. I thought Ben probably could have mixed in probably a pump fake another direction a little bit to kind of freeze everybody on that. But, you know, and Ben said after the game that was just a bad throw. Now, should we?
That's a bad throw. You know, Dave, exactly. And we didn't talk about this in the Cincinnati game, but you remember that throw he made down the left sideline where two Bengal defenders went up and basically knocked the ball from each other's hands. And we had the throw in the New England game. We had one throw. I mean, basically what we've seen from Ben, and Ben's playing good football, is what we've seen, you know, a throw a game or maybe two throws a game that are really bad throws. That was a really bad throw, not only what you said in terms of it more or less kind of didn't look the safety off and didn't pump or anything, but really underthrew the throw as well. And people have talked about the longer ball to Mike Wallace. I didn't really get a strong impression that he underthrew that. Now, he didn't lay it on there so it was perfect, but he got it out there far enough, I thought. What were your thoughts on that one?
It was slightly underthrown, I guess, but, I mean, he still had a step on Carr there. I thought Brandon Carr did time his jump excellent there to get up kind of high point in the ball, but it still wasn't enough, and the ball still hit Mike Wallace right in the hand. So yeah, everybody's going to bitch about when you go for the juggler and it does not connect. It'd be one thing if we're talking about a windy day and the ball being blown all over the place or Ben not showing accuracy, you know, because of that thumb. But I never saw any instances of that. I thought that was a good throw, a lot better throw than the one made to Antonio Brown, you know, in to start the second half drive there. So Mike's got to make that play. And when things like that don't work, everybody goes straight to play calling. Oh, we go deep too many times. But, David, you know as well as I mean, I like to track these toxic stats and all like that, that tracks explosive plays, and turnovers. Explosive plays is what wins ball games. If you have more explosive plays than your opponent, and you do not, and at least you bounce out on turnovers or beat them in the turnover category, you're going to win a ball game at least 80% of the time. And you know, this is what this offense is predicated on. It's been predicated on Ben extending the play, making the big play. A lot of people want to call it playground football, whatever you want to call it. It produces wins. And when a play like that to Wallace doesn't connect, that hits him right in the hand, all you got to do is shrug your shoulders and move on.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if guys talk to Mike Wallace this week about those two plays in particular. You know, we're seeing Mike Wallace obviously having a spectacular season, cooling off a little bit since early, you know, his early production. But also, you know, he's in the media. He's talking a little bit. He's got his peacock feathers out. And to have two drops like that, you know, maybe it's time to talk a little less about how nobody can cover you and things like that, because, you know, two drops in crucial situations doesn't help anything. In terms of taking shots down the field, I like it. I'm a big fan of it. In the Cincinnati game, they went deep a bunch of times. And people have to remember, look, they're obviously trying to make that play, but the threat of that play clears out a lot of things underneath for Heath Miller. It clears those bubble screens because guys want to play 10 to 15 yards off Mike Wallace, so he gets those wide receiver screens out there. So, you know, even if the play doesn't work, it has a role in the bigger picture of the offensive game plan. And that's something the Steelers have definitely been able to exploit. So I'll never complain about them taking shots deep. I think it's definitely good stuff.
And you hit the nail right on the head, David. Is a lot of people don't realize that some plays are used to set up other plays. We've seen this with the bubble screen time again, which once again, I think we had three or four of those go for pretty good yardage yesterday as well. And you know that's for these guys that insist on trying to play the 10 or 12 yard cushions on these on Wallace and Brown and Sanders or whoever's lined up outside there. That's what this is used for, to kind of loosen things up. And, you know, you're going to get your – I mean, why would you not take advantage of Mike Wallace and his speed on the big play? That's what you have him for. Look at what Baltimore has done over the last several weeks with Torrey Smith. That is the reason they went out and got Torrey Smith. They saw the Steelers' success at the big play, the ability to stretch the field, the ability to take the top off of coverages. And, you know, that's exactly what people know it takes to win in this league. You're going to have a few fall incomplete, but there's no better time to hit somebody like that than on a first down or something like that when they least expect it. Ben has been so good at converting third down situations, not only this year, but in years gone past, that you have confidence that you can take a shot like that downfield. Yeah. Now, of course, he did not convert third downs last night. Basically was the difference in why it wasn't a bigger margin of a victory than it was. But, you know, everybody wants to go the other way. When things like that don't work, they say, well, we should have a shorter passing game. Oh, we ought to run these 4 and 5 yard slants and all like that. You can't please everybody.
Yeah, so Dave, what was the final numbers on total yardage for the two teams?
You know, as much as people wanted to bitch about the defense, they really did a good job as far as numbers on Palco. I mean, Palco finished out with 167 yards passing, 18 of 28, with a bunch of those completions and a few of those yards coming on that final drive. Rushing-wise, they only rushed for 90 yards on 34 carries. That equated to a 2.6 yard rushing average. And let's not forget that you had the fake punt in there as one of those. And I thought they did a fairly good job of containing the run. I thought James Harrison was excellent, providing backside run support, even though he was not that active in the pass rush. On the night, he was pretty much held at bay. I thought Jason Worlds did a great job out on the other side in place of Lamar Woodley as far as holding the point. I thought the inside line, but I thought James Ferrier and Lawrence Timmons also had an excellent day against the run as far as that goes. Ferrier had some nice early hits on the game. So, you know, when you add it all up, you're talking about what? Let's see,
250 yards. Yep.
Yeah, 257 total yards on the game, and I think they ran like 63 non-penalty offensive plays on their side of the ball.
I thought the defense had a good game. We both tweeted, we both noticed that Cam Hayward was in there on that very first series even. I didn't know if Kiesel needed a blow or Ziggy needed a blow, or I didn't see. I think he was lining up on the left side. Anything for that? And I didn't see much of him later in the game. Do you think that was maybe an equipment thing, or any thoughts on why he was in there in that first series after not playing in the Bengal game?
No, I think that surprised me as well, especially lined up in the on the left-hand side, as you mentioned, where normally most of his snaps have been on the right side, giving Kiesel a breather. That'll be interesting to know, too, and when we get some of these snap counts back from my guys who are working on the participation charts now. But, yeah, that'll certainly be interesting to see the reasoning behind. Now, I thought he played okay. He was not fantastic. He did not blow, jump out off the screen or on tape, if you will. But I thought he played, adequate. I think he was in there later on in the game, too. Made a tackle or so, chasing down one of the plays from behind, I think I saw. So it was good to see. Basically, as we mentioned last week that on the podcast, that we noticed that he did not receive any defensive snap playing time for the first time all year against the Bengals.
And then, obviously Tomlin addressed that, said it had nothing to do with performance. He said, we've got two guys playing very well at the point of attack who are in good physical shape. They were able to stay in the game. Don't read anything into, he's got his head in the playbook and everything's good along those lines. So, Tomlin certainly didn't make it sound like he was in his doghouse or wasn't prepared or anything along those lines. So, it's good to see him on the field. Just curious, obviously, to see him on the field in the first drive of the game. Dave, in terms of bigger picture stuff, who was the Kansas City receiver who went over the middle and didn't put their hands up on the ball that was thrown there? Do you know the play I'm talking about?
Which one? What, the final one there? Or?
Yeah.
I think that was, hold on just a minute. I think that was Bo. Yeah, the one that was intercepted by Keenan Lewis to end the game. You know, what's interesting about that is they showed on that final play, the Steelers showed blitz and then backed out of it with the two guys inside there, dropped back into the zone coverage there. You're forcing a young kid like Palco to make a throw in between four white shirts on the play there. And he just, the ball sailed on him. Keenan Lewis was actually behind Bo there. I'm not sure Bo had a chance at that ball anyway. Keenan Lewis had the sky pretty high himself, and I think he was about 3 yards behind Bo when he made the interception there. So I don't read too much into that. Bo has shown some laziness before.
He was getting killed on New York Talk Radio on the radio today for that. How's he gonna explain that in the film room? And I generally agree with that, although I'd like to see the play again, because my thought, obviously the NBC guys, Collinsworth and Al Michael were talking about it. Al Michaels were talking about it during the game as well, because they replayed it about five times.
Yeah, and if you watch the replay, though, he probably could have made a better effort. I'm not convinced he gets it. He might get scolded as far as the effort goes there, and that's certainly understandable. The guy was targeted 11 times on the afternoon for 7 catches, only 69 yards. You're not going to make his type guy not going to make a living at 9.9 yards, average that way and all. So and Jonathan Baldwin too, that he was only targeted twice during that game too. That kind of surprised me a little bit. I was kind of surprised they didn't try to throw, they threw a lot of short stuff to the running backs. I kind of envision them maybe trying to use the tight ends a little bit more than they do, although neither of those guys are going to light the field on fire as far as talent goes, as pass catchers, go. But, one thing that you saw that the Chiefs opened up doing as well is they wanted to run a lot of that no huddle hurry up stuff so they could not give the Steelers an opportunity to recognize formation and make adjustments and all.
And that was the play where we saw Troy jump that after he saw that two times. And that's where you see how smart a football player Troy is. He quickly understood what they were doing, and they're basically going on a quick count. And he's back there, deciding whether to take the handoff or grab the quarterback or whatever on that play. Ended up not making the play because, he's back there so quick. But exactly what you said, they're trying to disguise their formation and not let the Steelers get a read on it.
Yeah, and plus they don't want to have to worry about Palko sit there at the line of scrimmage, and as good a head as this kid has on him, you know, like Tomlin said back on last Tuesday and all, this is not a guy that's going to be able to decipher what the Steelers do. I don't care that if he's been on the practice squad and spent time with the Steelers or not. You know, you do that by getting lots and lots of repetitions and all like that, something that he does not have. So I respect the game plan, what they try to do. They tried to run the ball quite a bit. They tried to set Palko up in some high percentage type situations. He did not make the throws when they were needed, and then thus the interceptions happened and all like that. I mean, let's face it, they ran the ball 34 times out of 63 plays, I think, non-penalty type plays there. So they had pretty good balance. It's just, I mean, we knew going into this game, Palko was not a guy that was going to kill you.
Yeah, Dave, we're at about 45 minutes. Anything you want to touch on here before we close? We'll certainly get into some of the games around the division and around the league as well. Tim Tebow with another, I don't even know what adjective to use, shocking, unbelievable win as the Broncos beat the Chargers in San Diego, pretty much knocks the Chargers. Well, you can't say it, I guess, in the AFC West. They could still win the division, but certainly the Steelers' wild card situation with the Bills losing. One of those teams had to lose. It's too bad it wasn't the Jets, but it probably should have been the Jets. But we can get into that Stevie Johnson stuff on Wednesday and all those games around the league. There were some interesting results yesterday.
Yes, indeed. Some interesting results yesterday, Dave. And, you know, things didn't break the Steelers' way, but they came out of there with the win yesterday. That's all that matters here. They're 7.5-point favorites, I think, opening up the game against the Bengals next week. My final thoughts on the Steelers game is this. The execution was poor on the offensive side of the ball. They had the penalties, the turnovers. The offensive line didn't play great. I thought the defense played great throughout the night, you know, limiting Palko there. But, you know, we use the saying it is what it is all the time. But and I think it applies to this game. You got the win. You got out of there with the W. Hopefully some things can break the Steelers' way in the division along the way. Maybe we get Ravens to slip up once or twice in their final five games. What the Steelers need to concern themselves right now with is you know, running the table right now. They've got a big game coming up against Cincinnati on Sunday. They got the Browns still twice that they have to take care of. They got the big game with the 49ers and a game with the Rams as well. So, you know, let's hope they can take care of business, solve some of these problems during this week, look at the film, make the corrections and all going forward here. Moving into Wednesday, we will have more breakdown of this game and hopefully a Bengals beat writer on again to discuss the upcoming game Sunday with the Bengals. So with that, I know your cell connection's kind of messing up here on the way out of the show here. So we appreciate everybody for listening. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Steelers Depot, at Terrible Podcast. Follow David on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. And we'll talk to everybody on Wednesday. Have a good day.